Hi, this is Iris Jackson, and this is Miracles Happen, Dreams Do Come True. And today, we have a gift from heaven for you. Dr. John Gray, author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. And I almost get them garbled there sometimes. I get tongue-tied on that. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's a real pleasure. I'm happy to be with you.
I am so happy to have you and honored. And I didn't realize you had written 14 bestsellers till I really started checking you out. And I also did not realize that Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus is the number one best-selling book of the decade. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it did really well. It continues to do well all around the world. It's amazing, in 45 different languages.
I am so glad.
It's actually very fun for me to travel. I travel around the world promoting this, you know, these ideas and sharing them. And people recognize me everywhere from all the different media shows that I've done. But they don't just say, oh, you're the guy. They'll come up and say how much it helped their relationship. And one of the most touching things is some people will come up and say, we got back together after being divorced after reading your book. I could have never imagined that benefit.
Well, isn't that the most thrilling and satisfying way to know your life makes such a difference?
It certainly feels good.
I guess. Well, you know, what I'm really interested in, what I'm really about, is peace on earth. And I think you have one of the biggest chunks of it that if we can get men and women to get along, you know, forget terrorists. You know, those are puppy dogs.
Well, I completely agree with you in a perspective that, you know, we spend much of our lives looking for the ideal person to share our lives with, and then we start making war with them. So if we can't make peace and stay connected in a loving way to the people that we chose to be with, how can we ever think about making peace with our neighbors, people that maybe we didn't choose to live next to? So and peace in the world is not even a possibility on one level until we in our personal lives can see that it's possible. One of my great hopes and dreams for the world, along with peace, is the pathway to peace, is as we learn to raise our children in a non-violent, non-threatening, non-shaming way. That has been the subject of one of my books called Children Are From Heaven. You know, I am a peacemaker, and it is my hope to help contribute to peace in this world. I think so many of us are come into this world to help bring peace, help bring light into the darkness of this planet. And we are much needed, and this information is much needed. And I was very blessed and fortunate to have a childhood where my parents had the knowledge and intuition of knowing how to raise children, seven children, without needing to punish them, but using communication to manage them, using leadership skills to inspire them and motivate them, rather than shaming them or threatening them or guilting them or punishing them. And so I'm a product of that. I know how you can be managed, how people can be managed effectively without guilt and threat, because I was managed that way. And people today in the world who are raised with threats of violence, they think the only way to control somebody is with violence, because they know that's the only way that they can be controlled, so to speak, in their life experience, because they never really confronted or dealt with somebody who could actually hear them, relate with them, negotiate with them, inspire them, motivate them. That's just not even in their awareness. They don't even see it as a possibility. So my commitment in my life is to share those good communication skills and ways of loving and supporting and acknowledging and appreciating and creating a sense of justice for all in a very practical way. And you start in your relationship, and based on that, you create a family that way, and then you work in your community that way. And as people begin to experience another way of negotiating differences, that is a platform for true and lasting peace in the world.
Amen.
Yeah, we're on the same page.
Amen. Our Venusians.
Yes.
Well, That was a mouthful, John. I want to go back to the part about your parents. To raise 7 children without threats, without violence, without shaming and punishing, that is one of the greatest masteries I've ever heard of. So you really had a starting place.
I did. It's based on all experience. And, you know, people say, what's the inspiration for your work and your books? And I really have to say it was primarily my mother. My mother just had this gift. She came in, she just gave selflessly. And actually, I've written a book this year. It will be coming out in September, which is called When Mars and Venus Collide. And the subtitle is Winning the New Battle of the Sexes. And she is the real inspiration of that book as well, because I'm creating a model for women to understand, you know, what their potential is and how they can affect men and how they can bring out the best in men. And I think one of the most inspiring things my mother used to say at times, you could just see it, which is she had a sense of pride when she would say or feel that the sense that I have everything to do, it's all up to me. And women today are so tired and stressed that, you know, they'll often say as an exasperation of overwhelm, you know, I feel like I have to do everything. I have to do this never-ending to-do list. Whereas my mother had a never-ending to-do list, but she was very happy about it. There was a sense of pride in it. And I remember once asking her, what was it like being a mother? You really loved it, didn't you? And she said, well, I still love it. It was so sweet. But she just gave it all her heart and soul, and somehow she had the energy to do it. And that is what I wrote my book about, which is the difference between women of a previous generation and women today, is that women today are just too stressed to access energy, and that women's bodies are actually designed in such a way to sustain over twice the energy that men have, and that men's bodies are actually built to run faster but take longer rests. Whereas women's bodies, biochemically, are based to run the long race without ever having to stop. And literally, her brain has 10 times more connecting tissue in it. It stays active all the time. It's way, way more active than a man's brain. And that's why women are so good at multitasking. But they can't turn their brains off. What they have to do is they have to maintain the ideal hormone balance in order to keep the brain relaxed. So it's all about hormones for women. And today's nutritional support that women have is so deficient of the nutrients necessary to balance her hormones, which would then allow her body to actually generate 20 times more energy than a man's body can make. That's how women's bodies are designed. But right now, they've become so much like men that they're disconnected from that ability. So I wrote a whole book explaining to women literally the biochemistry of a woman's physiology to help her experience that unlimited energy that I saw my wife having. And I have to say, quite honestly, my wife generally has it as well. I mean, it's an amazing, once you get the right nutritional support and the right awareness of the things that will nurture you as a woman, then you suddenly have unlimited energy, and then it's no longer a curse to feel overwhelmed with too much to do. You just go, oh, well, I have plenty to do, and you're happy to do it. So this is, you know, my next contribution, and I see it once again on a personal level, but it brings so much peace in the relationship between men and women.
Well, I want to back up a couple steps here. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but
no, any time.
I just have all kinds of questions. Well, first, I think that energy comes, that your mother had, it comes from an attitude of gratitude for life.
Oh,
she
absolutely.
She was grateful to have 7 children. She didn't treat you as a burden.
No, there was never a sense of burden. This is a blessing in her life. As when a parent has plenty of energy, and you can turn it the other way around too, but when you have plenty of energy, I feel so lucky to be a parent. I mean, if somebody said to me, what is the greatest blessing in your life? The opportunity to be a parent. Now, that may not be everybody's journey, but for me, such a blessing, and it is because I have the energy and the resources to be a good parent. If I didn't have that, it would be a burden.
Well,
I mean, but I'm right with you, gratitude. If there's somebody who's grateful for anything, I just want to reinforce that. I'd never seen a person in my life who was more grateful for all the blessings in her life than my mother. And which was so interesting, because if you look at her history, when she was 4 years old, her mother died, giving birth to one of her sisters. And so she lost her mother, and she was upset and went to her daddy, and she said, you know, Daddy, are you going to die? And he said, no, no, I'll always be with you. And so with that foundation, she wasn't so upset, because she knew she'd be okay. Now, the next thing is, then it was about 3 years later when her father died. And when her father died, that was a huge shock to her. So much of a shock that she went into a coma. But then she came back, and she felt the support of her father to bring her back, so to speak. And then she had to find a home after all, you know, the parents had died.
So she was only seven.
And she's only 7 years old and two younger sisters. And they didn't want to separate the children, so that none of the relatives could take them. So they went into a foster home. And my mother was forced to live in a basement. And she was very much mistreated by these people until she was an adult. And part of it was that they knew that when she became an adult, that she would inherit a large sum of money that they would never get. And so there was a sense of jealousy of her throughout her whole childhood. So she was literally like a Cinderella who, you know, was made to clean the house and live in the basement and all these various things. And one day she would, you know, get a letter from the bank saying, you have this huge inheritance. And then she married my father. I mean, it was quite an amazing story. And I look at her story. She's a woman who learned to be happy with nothing, and then suddenly this huge abundance came into her life. It was quite amazing.
To them that have it shall be given.
Yeah. Yeah.
Having the acceptance level of it. And
you know, like many people who've been through a trauma, not that we should all have to go through traumas of scarcity, but when they go through that, then they begin to learn to appreciate the little things of life, at least those that are able to move through it. They appreciate the little things. And she always stayed that way. I remember when I made a lot of money with my books and so forth, I said, Mom, you know, let me buy you a new car. She said, no, I'm very happy with my car. And then later on, she bought a new car, and she was bragging to me about it. I said, what'd you get? And she says, oh, I got a Lexus. And I said, well, that's great. I'm glad you got it. Well, she got one of the most inexpensive Lexuses, and it was used, and it was 5 years old. But she said, it's just like new. So she was able to see the value of things and not live in the glamour of things. And I think that's where her happiness and her true gratitude came from.
Wow. And the little things are the heavenly things. You know, I used to think sometimes when my children were little that I never did anything that was lasting. You know, it was kind of like sweeping the sand against the tide. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And that I didn't do anything lasting or important. And I was sitting one day, and I was thinking about all the jobs in the world, all the jobs in the world. And so many of them that men have are so hard. They're so, so, so hard. And they carry a lot of glamour, and they carry a lot of earthly rewards, and they carry a lot of, you know, the world's pictures of success. And I turned and I held this little soft, sweet hand in mine, and I said, what job is there more important than this? There is no job more important than this.
You're absolutely so right, and it'd be so wonderful for many of the women of the world to hear that message, because so often you ask a woman, what do you do? Oh, I'm just a homemaker, or I'm just a mother, when it is the most important role that there is. As you're telling that story of holding that little hand, I'm thinking of, I was doing a book signing for my book, The Children Are From Heaven book, and there were a lady who was signing her book, and she said, oh, I have hope this helps. I have this child that's just exhausting me. Another woman said, I have two children. She said, oh, how do you do it? And then she says, well, you know, and started to explain. Another woman said, I have three children. He said, oh, my gosh. And they were like bowing to her. And then I said, my mother was standing nearby. I said, well, here's my mother. She had seven children. And they went, how do you do it? And my mother said the most wonderful thing. She said, whether you have seven children or one child, you give them everything you have. and with a big smile on her face. And that's the joy. I mean, I can see as a, you know, in my maturity as a 55-year-old man, that always my greatest joy comes from being able to be successful in serving others, in contributing to others. But certainly there's a maturing process to get to that place where you have to first learn to get what you need so that you have what you need and then you can give to others. And that's the growing up process. And I certainly got a lot of what I needed so I could become that person, and I clearly get that the foundation of that came from my mother.
Well, you know, it's, to me, life is a process of just removing everything that is an obstruction to being of service, to being as God would have me be.
That's exactly right. And when we are tuned into the source, we feel grateful for everything we have because this is the journey we're on. Even when bad things happen, to see the good in that and know that ultimately we will find the good in that. And what can give us faith in that is when we look back on our past and we see what we call bad things happen, and then we see, well, gee, you know, because of that, I did take a turn and then something wonderful did happen, or because of that, I learned something wonderful. Not to say that we always have to have bad things happen in order for us to make good turns, but it's part of the journey. We make mistakes. We take wrong turns, and we have to self-correct, and we have to grow and learn. And it's by those holes in the road, those bumps in the road, those wrong turns.
Well, I don't think they're wrong turns. I mean,
exactly. That's what I'm saying. But people consider them to be wrong turns, and
yeah,
we're saying that actually they're part of the journey.
Well, I have a lost story that turned into a miracle. I had a bunny. When I was 17, I had a bunny. I adored this bunny. He would come when you called him. We didn't keep him in a cage. He was delightful. And one day, the garbage man left the gate open, and he escaped. And I went to every house within about 2 miles offering a reward for that bunny. And it was like one of the worst things that had ever happened to me, to lose that bunny. And one of the houses I went to was where my now husband was living. And we've been married 40 years.
Hmm.
We've been together from that time till this.
Hmm. Amazing. That's how you found her.
Yeah, and it was one of the greatest losses of my life, my 17-year-old life. I was crushed.
I understand that. I've every big heartbreak I've ever had always brought me to something new and wonderful.
Yeah, and, you know, my guidance has been, a lot of times when I felt down about something, I've heard this little voice say, kind of amused, since it's going to turn out anyway, would you like to start having a good time now?
That's a very good perspective.
Would you like to start having fun now? And that reminds me of something else you've been involved in this year, which I think is real important, is the movie The Secret.
Yes, it's a wonderful movie.
And focusing on what you want and matching the vibration of what you want.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, they filmed a lot more of me, but they didn't put me in the movie in that part. And I think it's because it maybe complicates that message more, but I'd certainly love to share that part of it in your show today.
Good.
Because what happens is just like you want your body, your frequency to resonate with what it is you want, and your gratitude is a key way, always affirming in the now that right now I'm in the process of having everything I want, and then you're grateful for everything that comes your way, and that's that strong belief that takes manifestation through what you attract into your life and through your motivations to do things. Not that you just sit all day and wait for it to happen, but you're naturally motivated to do things that seem reasonable, feel good to you. And feeling good is the whole key to it. Just continue doing things that feel good as you are moving towards your goals and so forth. But just as we want, you know, our thoughts and feelings to resonate with achieving our goals, we need to put substances in our body which also resonate with that goodness. What happens is people think that they are resonating, you know, they're saying, gee, I feel really good, I'm really grateful about achieving my goal, but it's just not happening. And then I have to say, well, what makes you feel good? Is it because you're believing and you have faith that you're in the process of getting there? Or is it because you just had a Starbucks cappuccino? Or is it because you just had a bowl of ice cream? Or is it because you just took some pill or medication to feel good? See, well, my thing is that look at your authentic feelings, and if your authentic feelings aren't positive, then work through what it takes to make them positive. Don't take drugs to do it, or don't cover up your negative feelings with junk food, which is what people will tend to do. So I see a lot of people have serious, you know, food addictions to unhealthy foods, thinking that, you know, their positive state is self-generated and that's going to attract into their lives what they want. But really, if you're dependent on drugs to feel good, you're not going to be putting out the real frequencies that will attract what you want in life. So I'm a big believer in changing the thought, changing your consciousness and your awareness, opening your heart, looking at your attitude. Those things are all so critical. But at the same time, we have to look at our lives. Are we still indulging in addictions? Addictions to substances that alter our mood. It should be our true, authentic feelings that come forth, not addictive substances like refined sugar or artificial sweeteners or junk foods, which so many are caffeine that so many people live on. And that's the secret. If you want the foundation, you know, I see people going, well, gee, I'm doing everything right, and sometimes it happens, and why is it not? And I go, well, you know, that's a question that comes up to show you we are not just our minds and our hearts, but we are also the body. The body is God's temple in this world. If we want to manifest things physically in this world, we take on a physical body, and we have to respect our bodies and feed it positive food, just like we want to feed our mind positive thoughts.
Could we back up again? I agree, and I want to back up some more. I'm not sure it's a service to have a belief that a woman's body can hold, you know, X times more energy than a man's, or that she's stronger or will live longer. I think that that's been a belief we've had for a while.
Well, I didn't say anybody's going to live longer. I'm talking about muscles. It's just simply men's muscles have more fast-twitch muscle, women have more slow-twitch muscle. This is just a physical reality on the physical plane, which allows men with faster fast-twitch muscles in order to have quick strength, whereas what gives women the slow-twitch muscles gives women endurance power. So this is just basic research. Now, if you want to change the laws of nature, from my perspective, that's not what we're here to do. What we're here to do is live in harmony with the laws of nature. You know, to say I can jump off of a building and fly, I don't see anybody doing it. Now, is it possible? Maybe one day somebody will figure out how. But long before that, we need to have peace in the world. We need to have healthy people. There's no practical functionality in trying to change the law of gravity. We have to live within the realities that we exist in.
No, I'm just talking about, you know, a lot. There's been all of this stuff about women living longer than men, and I think that a lot of that stuff is just belief that's been reinforced and expectation, negative expectation.
Well, I don't make any claims about men and women living longer. Who's not? That's not part of my message. But if you want to go there, the new research is showing that now more women and more women are smoking, and as a result, women are actually, I mean, the research studies say that women are actually living now shorter lives, and soon it might be equal to the lives of men. Statistically, there is a statistic that says women live longer than men. I certainly don't have any belief that women are supposed to live longer than men or not, but I do have a belief that men and women are supposed to be different. Women are supposed to give birth to babies, and there's a whole different biochemistry in making babies. Men are not supposed to be making babies, and so men don't have the biochemistry of women. There are physical realities that are just what is, not to be thought to be different. Now, is women living longer than men a physical reality? I don't think so. I don't see there's any gender difference when it comes to that. But when it comes to women's hormones, hormone called oxytocin, women produce much, much more of it. That then gives their muscles and their heart, by the way, much more sustaining power. If you look at a woman's heart, which is interesting statistics here again, a 90-year-old woman has the heart of a 21-year-old, whereas because her heart produces so much oxytocin, whereas a male doesn't, and his muscles will tend to atrophy at twice the rate of a woman's. And that is the nature of the fast-twitch muscle. When the astronauts go out in space and they land, The men come out in wheelchairs because their muscles have atrophied, and the women astronauts are actually pushing them out, and they're walking. That's when NASA started doing the research on how our muscles are different. But it's that muscle difference in the fast breakdown of men's muscles, which is why men will tend to be taking more naps in relationships. Women wonder, why is he just sitting there watching TV? He's literally letting his muscles rebuild, where she's going with her brain, which is way more active, busy, 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 doing all kinds of things. And as men and women accept and understand this reality of difference, then we don't misinterpret each other and feel these little annoying resentments, like, why he'd be thinking, why does she keep bugging me? I need to rest. And doesn't she appreciate what I do? And she'll be thinking, you know, why is he just sitting there in that chair and doing nothing? We have all these other things to do. Why can't he come home and see it? Literally, her brain sees it, but his doesn't. So once we accept those differences, then this then gives us the foundation, an understanding of what we're facing, so we can begin communicating in ways to solve that problem. What women learn in solving the problem is the necessity of learning to ask men for what they want, and not resenting having to ask, and not certainly not expecting him to do certain things that she would automatically do. As men begin to understand how women's brains and hormones are different, then men are more willing to cooperate, and they realize, well, gee, this is what she needs to cope with her stress. Let me give her extra support in that arena, that where he would tend to his own needs by just sitting down and reading a book or something.
Well, I tell you, football fans everywhere are bowing to you, John.
Am I with you guys right now?
Yeah, hello. Who's there?
Oh, hi, my name's Steve.
Oh, we have a caller.
I wasn't sure if this was a good time to interject.
Sure.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you a question.
Go right ahead.
I have been noticing that there's a shift in consciousness around the divine feminine. And I've heard the divine feminine a lot. And it seems easier for me to understand and have a good sense of what that is. That's mothering, that's nurturing, that's intuitive. It's being rather than doing. And so I got a real good sense of that. Now, it seems like, generally speaking, most people think about masculine as macho. And, you know, they'll say, you know, Venus is the planet of love, and most people call Mars the planet of war. So war seems more like the unrefined masculine, and macho is the unrefined masculine. So what my question for you is in your words, I am curious to hear what, in your words, the divine masculine is.
Okay, great. Well, you know, I see as Mars and Venus, you know, have other attributes other than Mars is the warrior, but that is typically associated because of the god Mars associated with war. But even as warrior goes, what back in a more refined perspective is protector. And ultimately, when our children go off to war, or a policeman goes on his daily duties, he's going out there not to hurt anybody and his intention. His intention is to protect. So that's the end result, protector. You know, we've been talking about peace today, and even with an enlightened society, I think we'll always need to have protection, at least for quite a while. But that doesn't mean we have to be dropping bombs on people, but we have to have police, and we have to be able to maintain order for those that are still in the dysfunctional world, and that tends to be a reality. We just don't want to allow that dysfunctional aspect of life to control life, which it seems to be doing now. We want to let those who are not dysfunctional control this world, work together to create a world of peace. And those that are dysfunctional, that will be around for quite a while, I presume, we have to make sure that they don't take control again. And that's where we need peacekeeping troops. So again, we're talking about Mars, we're talking about war, we're talking about peace, practical plans to move beyond that, and that as a reality. In terms of Mars and Venus, in my book, Men Are From Mars, I talk about Venus. The motto of every Venusian is to share and care. Sharing and caring is a very Venusian thing, nurturing, supportive, and relationship.
Yeah, I get that part.
And on the Mars side, it's to protect and serve. Not that women don't want to protect and serve their children and others, but that is the thing that keeps every man going, is to feel that you're making a difference. Just as women want to feel they're making a difference, it's a different, well, certainly women want to make a difference just like men do, but there's a different kind of difference that women are drawn to, and that's called nurturing. So one is kind of like making a difference by fixing things, solving problems. Another was by serving through nurturing. And men want to provide for those they care for. And that's a very sort of male, typical, traditional, which is to provide a solution, a means, a way, accomplishment. That is, these are activities that literally, on a biological level, the biochemistry of men and women, the action of providing, achieving, accomplishing for someone, making a difference, raises testosterone levels. And men, in order to cope with stress, need to make about 30 times more testosterone in a day, which is a very significant factor. So that would be the male energy, the Mars energy that I write about in my books, whereas the female energy has to do with a hormone called oxytocin, which is the nurturing, bonding, friendship hormone, sharing, caring, communicating, commiserating. And not that men don't like that and enjoy that, men's bodies just can't deal with as much of that as women. And here's the flip side of it, which is that oxytocin will actually lower stress levels in a woman's body. But oxytocin does not lower stress levels in a man's body. It's testosterone that will do that. So what you see is that women are naturally more motivated towards oxytocin-stimulating activities, whereas men tend to be motivated towards testosterone-producing activities. And when we can be successful at that, then we're happier people. And when we're not happy, we tend to be more stressed, and we tend to be more vulnerable to all of the sicknesses that plague us today, which is because stress is the foundation of all illness today.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I believe that. That is
right,
so true.
Great. Thank you.
Now, so back to the testosterone. This is what I want to know. Most people, when they talk about testosterone, they talk about fighting. They talk about being exhilarated by being in a confrontation. So what is an example of stimulating testosterone in a man that is peaceful and nurturing and in a positive light?
Doing the right thing, being purposeful, achieving a goal, helping someone, being considerate, making a difference in a poor person's life, in a child's life, being romantic, helping someone, all lifting someone up. All of those things are physiologically testosterone-producing, just as competing is as well, just as a sport is, just as aggression is. So it's really action with an intention. And when you're following through, your testosterone levels go up if you have confidence.
If you have confidence?
Yes. When you don't have confidence, if you present me with a problem and I feel I have confidence that I can solve it, my testosterone levels will go up. If I don't have confidence that I can solve it, then my testosterone levels will go down, which is why you sort of become, men typically become depressed when they don't know how to solve a problem. That's often when they're out of work. So work gives us a whole list of problems all day long to solve, so it keeps our testosterone levels up. But when we're out of work and we feel like we don't know what we can do to make a difference, it's way, way more stressful for a man than it would be for a woman. Because testosterone is not the major hormone that helps her to cope with stress. It's when a woman feels like everything is up to her and she's out there all by herself, abandoned, rejected, or alone in the world, that's the major source of stress for a woman.
Say that again?
Well, we've got two sources of stress. I mean, to simplify this, and we're talking basically the yin and yang of life here, male-female, one source of stress, and you can see this statistically with men, is that when a man's out of work, that's a major source of depression. It's as though he doesn't feel that he's needed in this world. Nobody's saying, hey, would you come do this for me? And then he does it, and then he gets rewarded which acknowledges that he has value, that he made a difference. So making a difference raises testosterone. Women can be depressed, and they could be, they could have a job, they could have five jobs. As a matter of fact, many women who feel that when they're depressed, they'll say, everybody needs me, you know, I have to do this, I have to do this, I have to do that. That doesn't take away her depression when other people need her. What causes her depression is when she feels she has to do it all herself, and no one is there to give her what she needs. So that's like a mirror reflection of the male. So the man needs to feel successful in meeting the needs of others. A woman needs to feel that others are successful in meeting her needs and that she doesn't have to do everything herself. When she gets in that place of, I have to do everything myself, and she's disconnected from support, that becomes a major source of depression for women. Does that make sense to you?
That's good.
Yeah, and that's even biochemical. You know, basically, when being isolated, abandoned, or rejected, or alone, that's the opposite of oxytocin levels. Her oxytocin levels will begin to drop at those times. And oxytocin can be measured in the body and has been shown to lower cortisol levels, which is the stress hormone that causes us to prematurely age and get sick and feel depressed, etc. Are we still connected?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Is anybody else there? I think the radio show got...
No, are you... Hello?
Sorry. What did I miss? I felt like you guys were discussing and I missed.
Well, we were discussing how men and women are affected by stress differently, and sources of depression for men tend to be when you don't feel like you're making a difference, you don't feel needed in the world. And women often become depressed when they feel that they can't get what they need in the world. Many depressed women feel like everybody needs me, but nobody's there for me, which is kind of the reflection of what it would be for a man.
So it sounds like giving and receiving.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
And go ahead.
I'm sorry. Did you get your answer that you were looking for?
I did.
I think you kind of got your Mars back up about men getting a bad rap.
Yeah.
I understand that.
I agree. Men do tend to get a bad rap, but some men are worthy of that bad rap, but it's not all of men. So it's, you know, men are amazing beings, just as women are, and that is what we want to give the message to our children. And which is why I'm a big proponent of doing whatever you can, if possible, to make a marriage work. Because not only are you giving the child the stability of a family, but by making it work, by bringing out the best in your partner, if that's possible, you're teaching your child to see the goodness of both men and women.
Oh, that's so important, isn't it? So important.
Okay, well, thank you both.
Well, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay. Now, John, one of the things you're focusing on, besides your book that's coming out in September, Mars and Venus Collide, that sounds fun.
Yep.
you are doing online coaching?
Yes. At my website, we do online coaching for people on relationships, and also we have a wellness community as well to help people with that. And then we also have telephone coaching. We also have at the website a free TV show where we have a whole archive of hours and hours and hours of interviews with me. And then we also have a radio show as well, a weekly radio show, that they can get for free all at MarsVenus.com.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for giving yourself in all of these ways. You know, I was looking at the part about, you know, being Mr. Fix-It.
Yes.
And I was thinking, like, you are the cosmic Mr. Fix-It.
I do like fixing things.
Well, you have looked at the whole problem and come up with the solution and then given it in 1,000 ways. And I just thank you for that with all my heart.
I appreciate that so much, and you're inspiring me to talk about a new program that, not that I haven't been doing it for a long time, but it goes right along with what we're talking about with The Secret and creating peace in this world, is also having a sustainable world, which is, you know, to work on, to increase the awareness of the environmental mishaps which are occurring in the world, and how we can do our part to create a better environment to sustain and nurture the planet. Just as we want to nurture ourselves with positive thoughts, we want to support the planet. And I'm sure there's many people listening who are very eco-friendly and do many things to support the planet. But another approach to this as well is recognizing that just as our planet has become polluted, our bodies have become polluted. And more research is showing that so many of the sicknesses that people commonly have in this country are all directly related to the accumulation of toxins and heavy metals that we breathe in, that are in the vaccinations that people take, pesticides that are in the food we eat. There's just toxic substances that go into our body. And even refined sugar, more than a couple of teaspoons, can be a toxic substance to the body. And so we find it everywhere. And the good news is the body is a miracle, like the theme of this show, miracles. And I see health miracles all the time, people that have every single condition. We could just list them all out. And I've seen people without drugs, giving up their drugs, cure these conditions. Their body is a miracle, just continues to come back to normal. And it's simply using the process of cleansing. It's the oldest healing mechanism in the world, and it's giving your body the opportunity and the support to clean house. I mean, just imagine if you never cleaned your house. It would just start to go downhill, to put it politely. And we really have to look into all the different traditions of cleansing and how useful they are, and recognize they've been around on this planet for hundreds of thousands of years. Well, guess what? We need them now more than ever before. So one of the things that my website people can learn about is my cleansing program and so forth. And it's much of that is written in my book, The Mars and Venus Diet and Exercise Solution. So that's a book, that was my last book I wrote. And it's not going on diets, and it's not exercising more in most cases. It's understanding the right kind of exercise for you and the right food plan for you, as opposed to eating less. I tell people to intuitively eat, but make sure that you're thinking well at that time. You know, when you're in a bad mood, and look at what you want to eat, and that's generally it's the worst food for you. So you can know the bad foods for you by just looking at what you want to eat when you're not feeling very good.
Whoa, that was a mouthful. Oh, you mean the Ben and Jerry's syndrome.
That's right, where you just kind of...
A half gallon of Ben and Jerry's. That's a real interesting thing you just said.
Yes, it is. It is. And another thing, just to go along with that, is I see so many people, you know, it's about 60% of our population as they get older have a weight problem. But it's even happening in our children today, too. This is about 30% of kids that are obese.
Video games.
Well, these are just huge problems. And, you know, one of the things when you talk about exercise, the doctor says, well, you should have your child exercise or you should go exercise. What people don't realize is when you get to about 20 to 30 pounds heavier, if you do the normal kinds of exercise, it will actually cause you to put on weight, and it's not good for you. And it will certainly inhibit your body's ability to lose weight. And this is, in most cases... And this is because when you're overweight, it means you're out of shape. And so if you were, let's say, go for even a jog, you'd be out of breath in a few minutes. If you were even to go for a walk, if there's a level walk, for some people, after 10, 15 minutes, they're going to be out of breath. And anytime you're out of breath, what that means is that you're not getting enough oxygen to the cells. The exercise you're doing is causing you to get out of breath. Then that means your body can't burn fat. Whenever your cells are not getting enough oxygen, then they can't burn fat for energy. They can only burn sugar for energy. So you'll burn carbohydrates, but you're not going to, you're just going to crave more sweets and sugars, and you're certainly not going to be able to burn off the extra fat that's on your body that's weighing you down. So that's an amazing realization, because I've seen so many people, I still see them. They're just, if they're overweight, they're out there trying their New Year's resolution to exercise really, really hard. They're really going to show their intent, but unfortunately, it's not going to work. And then New Year's resolutions don't turn out because they don't get results. So again, that's the importance of understanding the biochemistry, which is that for the body to burn fat, the cells have to have plenty of oxygen. if you're in shape or close to shape by exercising, delivers, it puts more of a demand for energy, so more oxygen gets to your cells, and then you burn fat very efficiently. But when you're out of shape, then what occurs is your body can't get that oxygen to those cells. You'll find your, because you're out of breath, you just don't have enough capillaries to deliver the oxygen and the fat to the cells to create the energy. So your body goes into a sugar-burning state. And that's the most unhealthy place we can be, is where our body's craving and hungering off of refined carbohydrates. And I know I'm speaking kind of fast, and I just have so much information on this, and we only have a few minutes. So I want people to know that this information is in my book, The Mars and Venus Diet and Exercise Solution, and it's also on my TV show for free. I've got hours, 20 hours of this kind of information at marsvenus.com if you just go to the link, a TV show or radio show.
That's so great. Thank you for giving that, John.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. Just as you're creating a miracle through bringing your show, what I'm trying to do is bring the information, the awareness to people. I remember back in the 70s, I started my teenage years with transcendental meditation, which was to raise the consciousness, higher consciousness. And in a different way, I feel like I'm doing it today, but in a very practical way. If people, making people aware of just increasing the awareness of how they can empower themselves. There are so many ways that we can empower ourselves, we can change our lives, that most people are just not aware of. It's so amazing to me that what common knowledge is today is contrary to what reality is. You know, you go to your doctor and he says, here, take this drug and you'll feel better. No, you'll get symptomatic relief sometimes, but then you'll feel worse.
And need 7 other drugs that have side effects.
Nicely put. That's right. Every single one of these drugs has got side effects.
Don't worry about that.
Right. Don't worry about that. Just have the immediate gratification. And it's not that these kinds of doctors who do that are bad. That's just what they've been taught. There are other, you know, to be balanced here, there are 5% are going to be your holistic type doctors, alternative type doctors, and naturopathic doctors, and they're going to help you and help teach you how to be healthy. And unfortunately, our system today isn't training our doctors in the knowledge of how to be healthy. They just identify drugs, identify disease, and give drugs. We've just gone the wrong direction when it comes to our health. And not that health is everything, but I'm telling you, as you get older, and I'm sure you know, health is everything. But the foundation of health is also right thinking. It's loving. It's correct behavior. But we can't forget the body. That's why I'm bringing it up. It's such an important thing. It all stands side by side. They're all pillars in this great temple that we live in and function through.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that. You know, while you're talking about this, I have to admit, you know, I'm a great exerciser. I swim all the time. I can swim 200 laps without, you know, breathing hard. I can swim all day without quitting. And I sort of veer widely between eating all raw and Pepsi and pizza. I have, you know, just, there's a little kid part of me that's real ticked off about what a steep path that is, you know?
Yes.
You know, and not eating things that most people are eating, and I can do it for a while. Now, I want to put this in the past. I've done it for a while, and then, I will just, it's not because I feel bad or anything. It's like, I want a Pepsi and a slice of pizza, and if you guys don't give it to me, I'm going to, you know, tear up the kitchen or something, you know?
Right.
It's like this little wild Tasmanian.
right.
So do you address that with people? I don't know what to do with that part. And it's not Venusian at all. It's a killer.
Well, first of all, everything in moderation is okay as far as I'm concerned. So if that was a one day a week thing, I wouldn't worry about it. But if it was more, then it's a concern. And the next thing is my explanation of why that happens is that when you use willpower to get on a good, healthy diet, generally, what will happen is you're eating better and so forth. your brain will function better, you will do more things. And while we'll call that getting in the zone. So when you're in the zone, your brain functions better, and it literally uses up fuel faster. So if those organic foods that you're eating, I'm sure all that good food, doesn't have enough of the minerals your brain needs to continue making zone brain chemicals, then what will happen is you'll actually crash, meaning you'll feel really good, your brain will function better, your brain will then use up all of its high-functioning minerals, and you'll crash down, and then you lose control. Your reptilian brain sort of takes over.
That's who it is. It's definitely a reptile.
The reptile inside. There's no controlling that reptile. I want it now. I must have. It's what you were saying, the thing where you mindlessly walk up to the refrigerator and reach in and grab a quart of ice cream. There's no control over it. That is the reptilian brain in action. And what it has to do is it needs energy, extra energy to get the brain to function because the brain's not functioning. But the reason the brain's not functioning at the level it wants to is because it's literally run out of certain minerals in order for the brain to function. Those minerals would be things like zinc and lithium are your big guys that need to function.
John, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're out of time, and will you come back?
Sure, I'd be very happy to come back.
You are a limitless fountain of knowledge that we really need right now. I thank you so much for all of your gifts. I thank you for being here today. I thank people for listening, and I thank you for coming back.
Oh, very happy to be here. And people want to get more of that story I was just telling you. That's another TV show. If they just want to go to MarsVenus.com, all the information's there at the TV show.
Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
You're very welcome.
And,
have a good day.
And next week, between 2 and 3, we'll have Jas Mahin, who is the founder of the Self-Empowerment Academy in Australia and the author of 17 books, and she is just a treat. And I thank you with all my heart for being with us today. We'll see you, speak to you Monday at 2. Until then, happy trails to you. Until we meet again, happy trails to you. Keep shining until then. Happy trails to you till we meet again. God bless you. This is my wish for you. May all your dreams come true and be 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible. Amen, amen, and yee-haw.